Over the past 25 years, environmental protection measures have greatly improved the health of the Great Lakes. However, the region's waterways are facing new issues. According to the International Joint Commission's latest progress report, warmer temperatures are having a dramatic effect on the ecological health of the Great Lakes. Lana Pollock is the chairwoman of the U.S. delegation of the commission. She joins us today to discuss the past, present, and future of cleaning up the Great Lakes. Welcome, Lana.
Hello, and good morning.
Thank you for joining us. This report focuses on the Great Lakes health since 1987. Let's talk about some of the improvements first. What are some of the improvements we've seen over that period of time?
Well, the improvements go back actually even earlier to the 70s, but in the last decades, we've seen improvements in the intensity of chemical contamination in the waters and in the ecosystem as a whole. So that means the fish, the birds, and the fish that humans eat. Some of those pretty potent chemical contaminants have significantly diminished as a result of improved policies and improved practices. We no longer just dump used chemicals and electronic used materials like we used to. That's made a difference.
What do the successes say about the importance of funding environmental projects?
Sometimes it's funding that does the trick and really makes the difference. And sometimes it's regulations that make the difference. And sometimes the regulations actually save public dollars at the end of the day. But the funding part of it, really the best part, was starting again in the 70s, and it really showed up in the 80s with improvements where the federal governments of both Canada and the United States, as well as some of the provincial government of Ontario and the states, put in a lot of money to build better wastewater treatment plants. When we first started looking at this in the 70s, it was clear that there was an enormous amount of waste going directly into the lake. So for the biological contamination, that was an improvement in that. That was investment of public dollars, made a big difference. Unfortunately, things that, systems age, and we now need new investments because infrastructure doesn't just stay new as the decades roll on. But that was a case of money making a big difference in public health and in the health of the lakes. In the chemical contaminants, it's more the regulatory controls that have made a big difference.
Does your study suggest which projects really need focus here going into the future?
Yes, there are some obvious ones. One is that we saw a great improvement, and anybody who's been around in this area for very long knows that we saw a big improvement in Lake Erie when the farming practices were changed and when the wastewater treatment plants were improved and when we outlawed the use of phosphates in the detergents that we use to wash our clothes. All of that made a difference in reducing the phosphates, which are the nutrients that load the lakes and create the opportunities for algal blooms, these big, slimy, green blooms, some of which are toxic, some of which are just plain messy and stinky. And that made a big difference. Now we're seeing the return of the algal blooms, and again, we need to take a look at, in fact, we need to do more than look at, we need to actually change farming practices. We also need to start looking at investing some money in new wastewater treatment plants or upgrades in that as well.
Do you think that climate change is playing a role in the increasing frequency of these algae blooms?
Yes, yes, indeed. The science indicates that they are. So, for instance, possibly the level of tolerance for certain kind of loading in cooler water wouldn't have quite the same impact as in the warmer waters. But that's still work that needs to be done with the science, which is another thing that costs a little money that has a big return, which is to say we need better, more consistent monitoring of what's going on. That's federal dollars, again, state dollars as well, provincial dollars as well, both in Canada and the United States, so we can fund the science, the monitoring, and the science for the analysis so we can understand what causes what. You can't do this on the cheap. But in the end of the day, of course, the benefits of the Great Lakes being healthy has huge economic returns.
I'm led to believe that in your report, one of the more interesting features of it is that it suggests there isn't that much we can do about climate change. Do I have that right?
Well, there is a lot we can do, but there's nothing we can do in the short term. We need to get both governments, both Canada and the United States, are really got their head in the sand in terms of the impacts, the true costs of climate change. So for our grandkids and great-grandkids, yes, we need federal policies and we need state policies that would reduce the amount of carbon we put in the air. For instance, the ballot initiative that failed in Michigan, Proposition 3 last November, would have greatly reduced the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere. Over the long term, multiply that in various places around the world, and you will make a difference. But in the short term, of course, that's not the way we're going to be able to handle it. So it's a matter of adapting to the climate that we have now while trying to prevent and actually reverse it for generations to come.
We're talking with Lana Pollack, who is with the U.S. representative on the International Joint Commission. We're talking about the health of the Great Lakes here. With regard to low lake levels, Lana, the commission recently sent a letter to the governments that suggest investigating ways to raise lake levels in the Great Lakes. You declined to endorse this report, as I understand it. Why was that?
I did. There was a lot of excellent science in the report. There was a lot that I agreed with. In fact, I agreed with most of what was in there. It was what was not in there that I objected to. Again, I think that people who are looking for quick fixes on changing lake levels are fooling themselves. You know, you just can't do it. It's not time for...
What are they calling for?
I'm sorry? What they called for, they called for a lot of good things. They called for the same kind of science and monitoring that I've just mentioned earlier in this conversation, but they also called for getting ready to adapt to different lake levels. That's good, too. What they didn't point out, what they also said is, okay, go ahead and study. They didn't call directly for putting a plug, so to speak, or a partial plug in the St. Clair River. There's a lot of talk about the amount of water that has, the conveyance increased, the amount of water that has increased the flow through the St. Clair River due to historic dredging. The last dredging was in 1962, but it did lower the upper lake somewhat, and some people now want to reverse that. Well, you know, that's 50 years back, and I think it's foolish to be thinking that you can reverse the time clock in that way. What we really need to do is address climate change.
What role should dredging play?
We've got to clarify here two different kinds of dredging, or dredging in different places. There's the dredging that people are talking about, and it is important, and will provide value this summer. For instance, if you dredge in the harbors, you can get your boats into the harbors, you can get shipping into the harbors. That kind of dredging, depending on what you're pulling up and where you're putting it down, if it's contaminated, you need to be careful. You need to be careful where you put it down. But that is something that we all support, in at least in principle, because we want to be able to help people access the lakes, their harbors, all around the Great Lakes. The kind of dredging we're talking about here is dredging in the St. Clair River at the outflow of the of Lake Huron, and that there's pretty good agreement, that in general, that increased the flow of water through the St. Clair River, therefore lowering by some inches the water above it in Lake Huron and Lake Michigan, which is essentially one lake. Lake Huron and Michigan are just at the same level. So there are people who want to say, well, put something in the, some blockage, some degree of blockage, even if it's movable, into the St. Clair River. That, of course, would have, we don't know what impacts it would have. I mean, you could put a, a dam there. But, of course, that would be very, very, that would be a very dramatic change. And no one's actually calling for that. But you could put something there, people say. And this study did say, study it. I have to say my colleagues didn't go whole hog and, you know, just say, hey, build this thing tomorrow. If something were to be inserted into the river there, it would be, frankly, decades away before there would be an impact. I wanted to tell people there's no early fix for the low water levels that you're suffering, especially in Georgian Bay and the Les Chenaux Islands just east of the bridge. People are really suffering low water levels. Other people are suffering it too. But there's no fix for it. We've got the climate change. We've lost the ice cover in the winter. We've got more evaporation. Unless we have huge rain increases or snow increases, we're going to be living with low water levels.
Lana Pollack is the chair of the U.S. delegation of the International Joint Commission, which advises the U.S. and Canada on issues with their shared waterways. Lana, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for your interest.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org on Current State every Tuesday.